It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, indeed. Just like John Fox says, here we go. It is the 19th day of October, 2017. This is Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday on the Horn. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm planning on having some family time tomorrow evening, so we're going to try to get the week's extraordinary, ordinary roundtable taken care of this evening and have our little bit of fun. Because I just love Friday on the Front Porch. And Thorn in the Side Thursday is pretty special, too. So this is a hybrid. It's a combination of Thorn in the Side Thursday and Friday on the Front Porch. Thus, Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday. And we're off and running. This is a listener-supported broadcast effort, almost 12 years old. We will turn 12 years old on Tuesday, the 24th of October. And hopefully we'll do that, and we won't have any fundraising holes or anything like that to talk about. This program, this particular evening, is brought to you in part by Kenda in Missouri. Also brought to you in part by Tosh. Also brought to you in part by Joseph in Ohio. Brought to you in part by Robert in Iowa. And brought to you in part by David, also in Ohio. Those are our five subscribers for the 19th day of the month. If you'd like to... If you'd like to be part of the subscriber crew, so I can say, and listeners like you, and community members like you, the idea of listeners that this is some sort of passive undertaking. No, it's not. But if you'd like to be a subscriber, golly Moses, we'd love to have you on board. Just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the Contribute tab, click the little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, put $10 in or $20 in or whatever you want to put in. You will be you will receive bumper stickers in exchange, well, not in exchange, but as a thank you. It's not like we're selling bumper stickers or anything. We don't sell anything here. Well, we don't sell anything except for, that's right, galvanized garbanzo. New from the intrepid little nutritional elves at Horn Labs, galvanized garbanzo will make you feel full of beans. Galvanized garbanzo from Horn Labs. You know, I've never really cared much for garbanzos. And to this day, the only way I can get my fill of garbanzo nutritional goodness is with galvanized garbanzos from Horn Labs. That's right. Just a couple of little galvanized garbanzo capsules every day, and I'm practically jet-propelled through my each and every day. That's right. Galvanized garbanzos from Horn Labs. because you can't be a real radio program unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle on it. That's why the folks down at Horn Labs are working every day to come up with a new nutritional supplement each for each and every program. Galvanized Garbanzos, just $29.95 for a month's supply. And, well, if you act now, you can get a two-month supply for only $60 and a three-month supply for only $91. Each and every galvanized Garbanzo capsule can be tested with the little goofy test strips that we'll provide to you. And you can check and make sure that your galvanized Garbanzo capsules are doing exactly what we say they'll do, which is absolutely nothing. Galvanized Garbanzos, another useless nutritional supplement from the folks down at Horn Labs. Yes, indeed. Galvanized Garbanzos. Accept no substitutes. This side up, use no hooks, post no bills. Operators are not standing by, and this is not a free call. Galvanized Garbanzos from Horn Labs. But apart from that, we get by on listener contributions. And thanks to the actions of the overnight crew, the subscribers, what would have been a $400 fundraising goal this evening is just $300, which is awesome, which is easily divisible. One at $300, two at $150, three at $100, four at $75. Eight at $37.50. Mm-hmm. 16 at 18 and a quarter. You didn't think I could do that, did you? 32 at $9.13, because we're going to round up and put it into the mansion, the Horn Mansion Winterization Fund. That's right, Brother Deacon Asa. Galvanized Garbanzo. Brother Deacon Asa says, I hear from the marketing department that the extra zinc in it gives you a massive boner. Well, it does. It does. And it puts a twinkle in your eye and a spring in your step and a sparkle in your smile because it's full of nutritional goodness. Galvanized Garbanzos from Horn Labs. Absolutely, labor man. It will galvanize your boner. You know, every evening I'm grateful that I don't have to pretend that any of this stuff actually does anything. It's wonderful. I don't have to talk about how any of this foolishness has lowered my cholesterol. I don't have to talk about how it galvanizes. Yeah. And by the way, these product claims have not been tested by the FDA. Silent R. Lamar wants to know, hey, Bob, are the people of Horn Labs from the Space Food Division of NASA? They are, Silent R, they are. They were proudly booted out of the Space Food Division at NASA when the Space Food Division at NASA realized that no one in their right mind would ever ingest anything that anybody at Horn Labs ever came up with. Mm-hmm. By the way, we've got birthday wishes to send out today. It's a dual birthday celebration in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Happy birthday to Sparky, and happy birthday to Thomas over at FYINation.com. Happy birthday to you both. I hope it's a wonderful I hope it has been a wonderful day and continues to be a wonderful day. That's right. That's right, Clarity. Galvanized Garbanzo will also help you pass a polygraph. It'll galvanize your skin responses. You're absolutely right. GSR isn't just gunshot residue anymore. No, indeed. No, it's not. And so there we are. By the way, you know, just I got to get the reminders out there. If you don't like PayPal, well, there's a couple other methods whereby you can help. There's always the United States Mail, which if you address an envelope to, you know, preferably with something in it, checks and money orders only, please, made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I don't see them. You can mail them to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWB 25801. Or you can use the handy-dandy Patreon campaign. Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, where we're trying to get enough subscribers to actually equal one full broadcast's worth of fundraising. We're not quite there right now, but we're trying. We're trying really, really hard. One of these days, it can't possibly happen between now and the 12th anniversary. That's too much to be hoped for. But one of these days, maybe we'll have 400 subscribers at $10 a month, and the time that I spend at the beginning of the program talking about all this will be actually spent on meaningful product programming, except, of course, for the obligatory bullshit Horn Labs product, as long as at least until I've gone through the entire list of vegetables known to the internet and various and sundry farmers and herbalists. Larry noting, at least the Horn Lab keeps it unleaded, I hope. with a story attached from thestranger.com. Headline: Alex Jones's nutritional supplements contain lead. Oh, yeah. Well, what do you want from a guy who throws chairs over demon transgendered demons sidling up to baby giraffes? Observation coming in from Scott and Punky. Subject line: 9 effin' months. Since there's no program on Friday, I'm sharing this a day early, because tomorrow will be the 20th. I'm not a woman, so I've obviously never been pregnant. Still, I can't help comparing the 9 months since Trump's swearing in with a terribly difficult period of gestation. Think about it. All the classic symptoms are there: endless fatigue, nausea with or without vomiting, headache, constipation, bizarre cravings and thoughts, depression, feeling massive, bloated, and utterly without grace, and the due date relentlessly retreats like a desert horizon. Well, or perhaps even, you know, a mirage, because one begins to wonder if it's ever... If the end of the Trump era is even possibly real. And yes, I got a note from Randy in PA here. Buffer's reloading occasionally, although sound quality is fine. We're going to have some buffering, because we're having some interweb tube problems. I don't know. I'm not drawing any bright lines or anything. But for all I knew, no, it may have something to do with Bridge Day. Who knows? It's hard to say. Weird. I apologize, but it's there, and there's not a blessed thing I can do about it, and all I can really do is hope that we get through the program. This story from The Stranger... A consumer watchdog group, the Center for Environmental Health, has found high levels of lead in two of the products that that Alex Jones hustles on his show and on his website. The CEH report says tests found that two supplements sold on Alex Jones's InfoWars store contain significant levels of lead, well in excess of California Proposition 65 limits. Lead is a dangerous chemical well known to have devastating developmental impacts on children, crucial but less well-known are its effects on men, including sperm damage, heart disease, and high blood pressure. One of the Alex Jones products tested had more than six times the daily limit as defined under Proposition 65. Well, how about that? Well, one thing we can guarantee here is that none of the products formulated by Horn Labs has any lead in it whatsoever. Not even the first part per gazillion. In fact, every product from Horn Labs is not only lead-free, but mercury-free, and arsenic-free, and cyanide-free, and cadmium, and barium, and manganese, and magnesium-free. Also gluten-free, cruelty-free, free-range, non-GMO. Why would you ever want any other nutritional supplement than a nutritional supplement from Horn Labs? Granted, it's also nutrition-free. It's also reality-free. So, I mean, there's that. Mm-hmm. So, consider that when you're thinking about your nutritional supplement needs. And it can all be proven by our little test strips, which prove that there's absolutely nothing there. Not even any test strips. See how it works. So here in about 44 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for a Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday. And until then, well, there's some stuff I wanted to kind of cover along the way. You know, I've talked about the fact that there is very seldom sufficient coverage for the aftermath of the NRA's death lotteries. And so when something even approaches it, I think we need to at least mention it. On the front end, however, let me share something with you that Kelly shared with me earlier today. It comes from the Daily Mail in the UK. Dateline today. Did you know, and this is real, did you know that you can buy murder insurance from the National Rifle Association? Yeah, you can. They've been offering it since the spring of this year, murder insurance. Now you're thinking, well, that might be a step forward. You would be wrong if you thought that. Because you might be thinking, well, at least this provides some sort of coverage if somebody gets shot. Thanks for playing. No, this isn't that kind of insurance. You can purchase insurance from the National Rifle Association that will pay your legal bills when you kill somebody. Or just, you know, wing them or wound them or permanently maim them and alter the course of their remaining days of life on this little blue-green marble hurtling through the universe in its sort of helical, elliptical fashion. Really? No kidding. It's coverage in case you, the lawful gun owner, decide to drop your L and just become an awful gun owner and shoot somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called Carry Guard Insurance. For only $13.95 a month, you can get up to $250,000 in civil protection and $50,000 in criminal defense. If you go gold plus, that's $50 a month, and you get $1.5 million in civil protection and $250,000 in criminal defense. It's lawyer insurance. There's an organization called Guns Down, and they're advertising to make people aware that the NRA is out there offering murder insurance. Bronze, silver, and gold coverage. Where's the lead coverage? Yeah. What a racket. Murder insurance. It's disgusting. Now, oddly enough, I have advocated in the past that one way to deal with our with our gun problem in the country is to require mandatory, that's what require means, insurance coverage for all gun owners. The more guns you carry, the more guns you own, the more insurance you have to carry. You know, just like car liability insurance. So that when you do, you know, let's say your Freedom Protector falls out of your waistband down to the Wally World, and you wind up plugging some infant through the heart, you know, completely accidentally, totally unintentionally, you'll at least have insurance coverage for it to pay for the little baby's funeral. Or if it goes through baby, because, you know, babies really don't stop bullets that well. If it goes on through baby and then it maims mama, maybe the insurance would also cover some of her. Because, see, that doesn't really happen. Because we don't have that much in the way of reporting on the financial strains that our NRA death lotteries take on the people who are unwittingly and unwillingly and involuntarily subjected for it. No, I ran across this story a few days ago. CBS had it. Headline, Vegas shooting victim takes first steps since emerging from coma. And yes, just as let me remind folks, if you hear buffering, it ain't you, it's me, and it ain't really me, it's Frontier. All right, applying his unassailable logic to the problem, Brother Deacon Asa says, "Think about it, Bob. Murder insurance would be hard for the murdered party to collect on." This insurance policy. Of course it's for the murderer. I'll work on that. I'll work on a little clarification here. 27-year-old Tina Frost took her first steps after coming out of a coma. After the NRA death lottery's wheel landed on Las Vegas. Stephen Paddock, you see, in the massive flurry of ordnance that he used his legally obtained firearms under the sacred Holy Second Amendment to purchase, the flurry of ordnance that he flung into that crowd, well, one of the bullets hit Tina Frost, 27 years old, went right through her right eye and shattered the front of her skull and her forehead. It is a testament to the modern advancements in medicine that she's alive. Her right eye is gone. She went through 3 hours of surgery at Sunrise Hospital and Medical Center on the night of the shooting. As she came out of the coma, she was unable to move her extremities. Things like that happen when you get shot in the brain. But about a week ago, she took her first steps without assistance. Her mama, Mary Watson Moreland, made that announcement. She said, "We are so proud of our Tina, and everyone is amazed at every single movement she makes. She's had other profound moments, young Ms. Frost has. At 27 years old, she has opened her left eye. When they played music, she's tapped her feet, maybe the same way she was tapping her feet at the concert before the NRA Death Lottery wheel stopped spinning and landed with the pointer pointed directly at her. Mm-hmm. Her mama is thanking people on Facebook for the support that they've been giving to her on her GoFundMe page, because she has to have a GoFundMe page. Because there's nothing in the NRA, even though it advocates the sale of the firearms to perfectly legal purchasers like Stephen Paddock, who then purchased them by the goddamn dozen and thousands upon thousands upon thousands of rounds of ammunition. Well, the NRA just says, gosh, that's tough luck. If you guys want to think about maybe regulating the sale of bump stocks, but not passing a law to outlaw the sale of bump stocks, just a regulation. If you want to think about having a regulation, and in return for us letting you regulate bump stocks, giving us nationwide reciprocity on concealed carry, well, we'll let you do that. Ms. Frost's GoFundMe page has raised over $500,000, and every damn penny of it will be necessary in the end, and more probably, to see that she has medical care. At 27 years old, having been shot in the head by a lawful gun owner, she can even give a thumbs-up signal when she agrees with something. Mm-hmm. She and her boyfriend were at the concert because they'd driven from their home in San Diego to attend the Route 91 Harvest Festival back on the first day of October. Yeah. And this may very well be the last that we hear of Tina, because there's just not a whole hell of a lot of coverage out there. But that's one person out of over 500 that lawful gun owner Stephen Paddock was able to attempt to murder. He succeeded with 59 others. And the bills will pile up. And the search for appropriate treatment will continue. And the rehab will happen. And remember, if you talk about something like if it's just another day and you're listening to some Republican out there, they'll talk about the need for tort reform, which is another way of saying we're sick of our backers and benefactors being sued when they put things into the stream of commerce that wind up killing people. It doesn't matter if it's negligently designed automobiles, poisonous products. We need tort reform. We need to keep the Tina Frosts of the world from being able to sue to get compensation for their injuries. That's what they mean when they say we need tort reform. And of course, in one notable instance, the ultimate tort reform was granted one particular manufacturer, or one particular manufacturing segment. That is, of course, the gun industry, which was granted blanket immunity from suit as a result of congressional action. And yes, I would be lying if I said that Bernie Sanders supported that legislation. Because not all politicians, not any politicians, are perfect. This law obviously needs to be revisited, and not just revisited, it needs to be torn into a million tiny pieces and set on fire, and then shot into space. The guy who makes the bump stock, he probably needs to live under a bridge for the rest of his life. The executives at the companies that manufactured these weapons, they need to be driven from civil society, like Oedipus of old, and spend their days wandering and begging for their next meal. Because if you took every penny of every one of their goddamn salaries, you wouldn't even begin to be able to put a dent in the medical bills of all the people maimed in all the shootings that take place because of what they do all over the United States of America. Because make no mistake, and we'll use Las Vegas as a case in point. No one who was maimed there will be adequately compensated, because the adequate compensation does not exist. There isn't enough insurance. There cannot possibly be enough insurance. That leaves things like state crime victim compensation fund monies. There isn't enough of that in Nevada either. Okay? There's just not. In the case of Ms. Frost, Dr. Keith Bloom told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that he delicately worked to remove as many of the bullet fragments and shrapnel as he could. He noted he had to remove her right eye, but he couldn't get it all. And so Ms. Frost, for whatever life remains to her, will carry pieces of Stephen Paddock's lawfully acquired bullet fired from his lawfully acquired gun supported by the NRA inside her brain for as long as she lives. And as of the publication of this story, doctors still have not completely outlined what options Ms. Frost has for her long rehabilitation. They still haven't completely outlined what doctors, what specialists she'll need as she attempts to rebuild some simulacrum of her life before the NRA's wheel stopped and pointed at her. Stephen Paddock, of course, is dead, and thus he would have no need of the NRA's murder insurance because it just pays up to $50,000 in criminal defense for a lawyer. And frankly, $50,000 is not that much. That's why you don't want the $1,395 policy. You want the hot shit policy that'll hire you a $500,000 worth of lawyer. And if, for instance, you survive after you commit a mass shooting and a massacre, murder kind of thing, because the NRA says you're just that free to do. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I just wanted to share this because it provides us with a little picture, just a tiny snapshot of what happens when the NRA's when the NRA has an outburst of freedom in our country. So I don't know. I'll try to revisit it when I can. Latest fundraising update for her GoFundMe page is $571,064. And it doesn't even begin to touch what she's going to need. I wonder if the folks at GoFundMe, because all of these crowdfunding sources, whether they be GoFundMe or Kickstarter, what have you, they all charge a fee for supporting these crowdfunding campaigns. They get the money and then they disperse the money. And it's usually somewhere between 3% and 7%. I wonder if GoFundMe has waived their fees in this case, because let's see, let's just use a number like, say, 6%. 571 times 0.06 equals. Yeah, that's $34,260 that young Ms. Frost is going to need, and need badly. I don't know the answer to my question. I just wonder if GoFundMe has waived their fees for her, because it certainly seems like it would be the right and the decent thing to do. So that. Other things as well, though. I ran across a story. I haven't spent a lot of time on the Me Too campaign. I haven't talked a lot about the Harvey Weinstein allegations. Not because I'm shying away from them, but because I really don't know. I don't know how to say anything except, you know, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say except that it is a manifestation of a level of evil that is that I'm scarcely able to express. And it says the fact that the Me Too campaign started in the wake of the Weinstein revelations, and the number of women participating in it is shocking and nauseating. I ran across a story yesterday evening that Michaela Maroney, who won a couple of medals at the United States Olympics, for the United States at the Olympics as a gymnast, she took the silver in London and made that face that the face that went round the world. Well, she posted in the Me Too campaign as well. Because she, as for all intents and purposes, a child, was sexually abused in her pursuit of her dream of being a world-class gymnast. And of course, going back to last year, a tale of unfolding horrors became a matter of public knowledge as a result of the coaches and the doctors who were part of USA Gymnastics. The doctor who sexually abused Michaela Maroney as a child is in prison, and lawsuits are pending. And if you just go and look, at the Me Too hashtag, it's breathtaking. And when you look at the number of women who have been sexually harassed, sexually abused, raped, you begin to wonder about. Or maybe you don't wonder. Maybe that's the whole point. All the wondering stops. Because suddenly you're not surprised that a country that does some of the vile, hateful, and evil things that it does those things when we can't even let little children be children. Now, in the case of gymnastics, there's a separate discussion to be had, and frankly, in athletics generally, as to the propriety of putting children into training that is that intense. But no matter the intensity of the training, there's no excuse for the sexual abuse. And this all poses more questions about the nature of our country and the nature of men in our country than anything resembling answers. And at this point in time, given the volume of the allegations, the typical American urge toward, you know, not all fill in the blanks. Remember, not all cops, not all Republicans. You know, that's not all Christians, not all evangelicals, not all Trumps. It sort of falls away in a pathetic manifestation of futile foolishness. Because it seems that we just damned well, I mean, little girls, little boys, grown women, grown men, the focus is on women rightly, but I think it becomes abundantly clear that in many ways no one is safe? Michaela Maroney, who most of the country looked at and thought, you know, she's adorable. I mean, that face she made in London really was. And then she sort of made this trademarked thing out of pulling that face. She's cute as a button. But it became clear from the statement that she made on Twitter that she has spent years in the depths of pain. And it leads to a series of other questions. I mean, this is high profile and worldwide gymnastics, women's gymnastics. The idea of calling it women's gymnastics when most of the competitors at the Olympics are barely past adolescence, if they are fully past adolescence, is a bit of a misnomer. But given the nature of the allegations that happened there, and the Weinstein allegations and the Amazon guy allegations, well, these are all, what was the phrase that Dim Leader once used? Uniquely American. Oh, yeah, and he made a speech today, which I suppose we'll have to deal with. Michaela Maroney said, "Everyone's words over the past few days have been so inspiring to me. I know how hard it is to speak publicly about something so horrible and so personal because it's happened to me too. People should know that this is not just happening in Hollywood. This is happening everywhere. Wherever there is a position of power, there seems to be potential for abuse. I had a dream to go to the Olympics, and the things that I had to endure to get there were unnecessary and disgusting." And then she starts talking about Dr. Nasser. 15 years old. She says the doc gave her a sleeping pill for a flight to Tokyo, and the next thing I know, I was all alone with him in his hotel room getting a treatment. I thought I was going to die that night. He started off grooming her by telling her that the treatments he was giving her were medically necessary, and he'd been performing on patients such treatments for over 30 years. I'll bet he had. But the question arises, and I don't know the answer to this. Is it like this everywhere, or is this a particularly American disease? I mean, we know, for instance, of the abuses committed by the Roman Catholic priesthood in Ireland, for instance. But were little girls in gymnastics programs sexually abused when Romania was the world epicenter of women's gymnastics? East Germany, the Soviet Union? Or is it something that is particularly Western, particularly American, particularly white? I don't know. But just looking at things as they exist, it sure seems that way. Nasser, for instance, as a result of what he did in the U.S. women's gymnastics program, is facing 22 counts of first-degree criminal sexual conduct and 11 counts of third-degree criminal sexual conduct involving other victims. Those are all state charges up in Michigan. He's already pleaded guilty to federal charges of receiving child pornography, possessing child pornography, and hiding and destroying evidence. I got nothing in the way of an answer. And all I can say is that it's heartbreaking, and we have to find some way to stop it. And it's touched by language. It's touched by conduct. It's touched by attitudes. No, not everyone who makes an untoward comment is a rapist in waiting. But the whole thing becomes its own universe. I mean, I'm rethinking things. I tried to pull the B word out of my vocabulary a long time ago, especially in reference to any female of the species. You want to know? Okay, I'm rethinking this. I'm rethinking. I stopped making gender jokes about Ann Coulter a long time ago. I think referring to her as Anthrax Coulter is completely in bounds, because there's no gender, there's no nothing. No, that's just referring to the fact that she's poisonous like a disease. But take, for instance, Tommy Lahren. I mentioned this maybe a week or so ago. Is it okay to refer to her as White Power Barbie? Or is that harassing language? I'm not being a smartass asking this question. I'm asking it sincerely. You know, we think about things like this around here at the Horn. You know, there's been another Barbie reference for, of course, Sarah Palin, Caribou Barbie. I refer to her as Godzilla from Wasilla. I think that's okay because there's no gender attached to Godzilla. I don't think. If there is gender attached to Godzilla, it's something that would only matter to another Godzilla. But I'm trying. And, you know, I think back a million years ago to a drunken cast party in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, when the equity actor who was brought in at the last moment so the production wouldn't fall apart because the guy who was supposed to play the lead broke his legs riding horseback. Yeah, we didn't know that he was a functioning alcoholic when he showed up, but we sure learned. And he sat down next to this lovely young woman who was part of the cast, and sat down next to her and shrunk out of his mind, and looked over at her and said, "I just want to tell you that you have lovely feet." And proceeded from there. And she was really uncomfortable. And we got him up and sort of confined him in a bedroom where we could hear him bouncing off the walls. Just trying to make sure she was okay and safe. We didn't bust out all redneck and beat the shit out of him. I mean, we was in Alabama and everything, but it was the theater department, right? But God Almighty. So, you know, if you've got some thoughts on that, bring it to the table for Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday. Because we've got to figure, we are not better than this, but it would be nice if we could work toward being better than this. I mean, what's her name? She's a congresswoman from Texas, Bernice. I don't have the story in front of me, but she gave an interview in which she sort of, kind of halfway said that women could be responsible for harassment and abuse because of the way they dress. And she's an older woman. And the first impulse is to say, well, you know, she comes from a different era. Because that's what she said when she gave the interview, you know, in my day. But the thing is, there was no my day. The same thing happened with John Kelly, you know, the president's chief of staff. He said something manifestly stupid today. John Kelly said, "You know, when I was a kid growing up, a lot of things were sacred in our country. Women were sacred, looked upon with great honor. That's obviously not the case anymore, as we've seen from recent cases." What country did you grow up in, John? Because the idea of women being treated with great honor in this country that's at putting the best possible light on it, fantasy, and in lesser lights, it is a naked attempt at self-delusion. Women didn't have to goddamn die for the vote because they were so honored in this country. They didn't have to march in the streets for something resembling equality because of the degree to which they were honored in this country. They didn't have to beg and plead and yearn and keen for access to reproductive options because of the degree to which they were honored in this country. Not by a damn long shot. But there he is. Now, I really do, when we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and I'm hoping you'll be participating. If you want to participate, just reach out and and you've never done it before, send a contact request on Skype to SparkyDunk, SparkyDunc on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and turn and flip the switch on the bob signal and show you. Show you the direction to follow. John from Oregon with a note. American abuse, it's universal. This form of abuse goes beyond our country. Look at presenter Jimmy Savile in the UK. Oh, dear God, there's that, yes. He allegedly abused children for years. Gordon James was a Canadian hockey coach who abused young men who were starting their careers on the ice. I'm sure there are more. You might be right about the Western part. I don't know. I'm only asking the questions. But in so many ways, it seems, and this is not excusing conduct, it is not minimizing conduct. But and I hate it when that's followed by but. It's not intentional. What I'm trying to get at is that what we are looking at are symptoms of greater sicknesses, of a greater sickness. And I don't know quite how to define what the sickness is. I'd like to know if it's an American disease, a Western disease, or is it a human disease? I mean, the fact that we've got cultures the world over that make a decision that little male and little female children have to one degree or another have their genitals mutilated to make some deity happy, well, that kind of points toward it's a human problem. Or maybe it's a monster problem. I mean, do animals in the wild do this to their young? We know that animals in the wild don't kill for sport. Do they do this to their young? Is this some sort of toxic side effect of having a big old primate brain? I don't know. A note coming in from Steve on the Gulf Coast. Did I hear that right? The NRA murder insurance is a concept that must contain a fatal flaw somewhere. Or is it only something intrinsically perverse to start with? I think so. How does one determine whether a claim is legitimate or not? A claim for accidental death, for instance, is questionable based on a determination of suspicion surrounding the circumstances of death, or merely on the fact of a claim's having come too close on the heels of purchasing the policy. Who and how does one go about investigating an insurance claim for committing homicide? What does justification mean in such a case? Isn't this what police departments and their investigations are about anyway? Or is this kind of insurance just a free bag of cash to be handed out for members in good standing, and so long as the killing is a good one? Sick stuff. Regards, Steve on the Gulf Coast. P.S. Is such a claim to be deemed fraudulent when the murder is otherwise suspicious? Well, see, the way it works is there's if you buy the base level policy, there's $50,000 to buy you a lawyer. If you're charged with something, if they decide to charge you with something, and the lawyer can come in and defend and say, "Your Honor, he was only standing his ground." Yeah. Civil coverage buys you a lawyer if the family that the shooter ruined by standing his ground decides to sue. That number's higher because, you know, maybe there's a little bit of settlement money sort of wedged in there. I don't know. The jury ultimately decides what constitutes justification, or the judge without a jury. Yeah. But it's monstrous. It's monstrous, and it's disgusting. So, while they're being criticized for it, don't expect them to back away from it unless it becomes financially advantageous for them to do so. As it is, $14 a month, $50 a month? Because, you know, the reality of it is most gun owners are not going to shoot anybody. That's not the problem. It's not a majority problem. Society is held together by whatever strength there is in the weakest link in the chain. And, you know, that's why there are speed limits. That's why there's... That's why there's directions on fucking shampoo, okay? You know, don't drink the shampoo. That's why there are tags on mattresses and pillows. It's not some lawyer. It's not because of some bunch of lawyers. It's because of some bunch of stupid people. And so the murder insurance program will be huge for the NRA. They'll make a goddamn blue billion dollars off of it. And in a capitalist society, that's all that matters. And in a way, the idea is transferable to sexual abuse and sexual harassment. As long as there's money in it, it's probably going to keep happening. A lot of people have argued, and convincingly in many cases, that the only reason this finally happened to Harvey Weinstein is because his star has faded somewhat in the Hollywood firmament, and that he thus became, he became touchable. He stopped being untouchable. In the heyday of his power, even when things like this were known, he was untouchable. Quentin Tarantino announced today that he had known what Harvey Weinstein was up to, and he said, "I didn't do enough. I didn't do anything." Jim says, "Come on, Bob. Some women are bitches, and some men are bastards. Remember the bee of Buchenwald? Stop shitting fire to save matches." I disagree. Take for instance the comparison Jim gives us. Some women are bitches. A bitch is a gender-based reference to another animal. Some men are bastards. Well, a bastard is merely a commentary on the quality of the parentage of the person and doesn't touch upon gender. Now, on the other hand, of course, we've got that well-known philosopher, Professor Spicoli, and we hear from him rather frequently on this program.
You dick!
That, of course, is a gender-based criticism. And the question is it okay? Or does that just need to go away? And I don't know the answer. I don't. But it seems like what does gender do? What is it about gender that makes it insulting? What is it about sexuality that makes it insulting, except for the fact that society says there's something about some people's sexuality that makes it worthy to be used as an insult? I mean, when you get right down to it, it's kind of a mouthful, but to refer to someone as a pathetic excuse for an attempt at membership in the human race, that's pretty damning. Doesn't touch gender at all. Doesn't touch sexuality. Now, if we want to refer to the excretory, I think that's a different question. Pissant. Pile of shit. But language is language. And the only way to stop it entirely is to stop genderizing, and we're not just talking about insults, okay? You know, the Herb Tarlicks of the world, who go leering down cleavages, and saying, "Hey, baby, you want to go for a long lunch?" You know, there's nobody's getting called a bitch in that or any other word. but the conduct is nonetheless sleazy and could be comprehended as predatory. Yeah, Robert in Australia reminding me it goes all the way to Parliament. I remember when she stood up and nailed Tony Abbott to the wall. Former Prime Minister Julia Gillard takes aim at the opposition leader Tony Abbott, alleging a pattern of misogyny. The speech followed Mr. Abbott's call from Ms. Gillard's government to drop support for former Speaker Peter Slipper after he allegedly sent lurid text messages. The speech is now the most watched Australian Broadcasting Corporation news YouTube video ever at 2.5 million views. There we go. See? Look, we can find compromise regarding bitches and bastards. Brother Deacon Asa says, how's about we split the difference and call them all booger eaters? Yep. Works. Asa says, by the way, where's fundraising at? Well, an hour and 11 minutes into the programming, and we started at $300 to go, and we've got $300 to go. So that's where fundraising's at. If you want to help out, you know, head on radionetwork.com and click on chat room. And maybe we can knock some of it out. If you want to participate in Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday, the Bob signal is lighted. And you're welcome to participate. And I welcome you so to do. And we'll get it going here in fairly short order. Really hope we have a good group tonight, because we've got, like I said, I've deliberately stayed away from the George W. Bush speech today, because when I saw the content of it, I began shrieking and barking and, you know, sort of resisting the urge to tear at my hair and clothing and run naked in the yard, because it's not going to be a good thing, because I think we got some new neighbors coming, and I think they're fundies. Not sure, but I'm pretty sure. And you know, that's always nervous making. And I don't, you know, if you live in a sort of a city environment, you know, neighbors come and neighbors go. Not so here. Ah, Jesus, I hope they don't try to save my soul. I hope they don't ask me anything about religion or any of that stuff, because it'll be ever so much easier to be a good neighbor that way. Because, you know, I think my soul's in pretty good shape, if there is one. Okay, now we're getting into the finer details of things. Todd in South Carolina, Stan noting, Bob, women absolutely can be dicks. Which, of course, takes into another, and that's another conversation for another day, but there's another word, and it's absolutely unmentionable. It's the nuclear gender word in the United States, and in the UK and Australia, not so much Canada, I don't think. Well, I mean, the Canadians are so daggum polite that I think they excuse themselves if they say darn. Some of that leaches down into like Minnesota and stuff. But there's a word that, and it's used across gender lines. Don't be such a...
Beep.
What a bunch of...
Beep.
And are there any campaigns underway in Australia or the UK to make that word go away? I'm not aware of them, if there are. Yes, that's the nuclear gender word. And in fact, the nuclear gender word goes all the way back to Shakespeare. He spells it out. He spells the word in lines that he gives to a character. And it is absolutely off limits. Yeah. All right, quarter past the hour. Like I said, hopefully we'll raise $300 tonight. And that way, you know, if I'm not here tomorrow night, and I'm really hoping I'm not here tomorrow night, well, then, daggummit, we won't have a hole to fill in come Morin Monday. All right, break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Sometimes it sees.
It's Thursday, October 19, 2017.
This is nothing more than a big oil polar payout.
Alaska National Wildlife Refuge on the chopping block. Again.
Don't clean up right now. It's not safe.
California officials warn of toxic ash from the state's devastating wildfires. Like Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands struggling without power or clean water. Plus, Shell Oil opens up electric vehicle chargers at its gas stations in Britain.
All of those struggles and ironies straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I'm against war, except in cases of national security, or if we need oil. Or if, you know, we feel like having a war. Besides that,
this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, encouraging news for the most part this week coming out of California and those devastating wildfires.
Yes, firefighters continue to gain ground against those deadly Northern California wine country wildfires. Now officials are warning returning residents to not sift through what remains of their homes because of toxins in the ash from burned plastics, electronics, household pesticides, and other pollutants. That's according to Sonoma County Public Health official Scott Alonzo here in an interview with CBS News.
Don't clean up right now. It's not safe. The toxic ash and the debris is harmful. We don't want you sifting through it. We don't want children in it. Do not touch it.
And that's a lot of people that he's saying that to. Some 6,000 houses and commercial structures were leveled.
Yes, and when it rains, those toxins will be washed into the watershed.
And some rain is predicted for this week. Good news for the fires, bad news for the water drinkers.
Meanwhile, the plight of the battered U.S. Virgin Islands has fallen off the media's radar, much like the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico after catastrophic back-to-back hurricanes. Some power has been restored to St. Thomas, but local media confirms cases of bacterial diseases caused by contaminated water. On Wednesday, officials on St. John tweeted that their island has been 100% without electricity for more than 40 days. Infrastructure and economic losses are estimated to be more than $5 billion for both islands, but the current disaster relief package in Congress offers only a $5 billion loan for both Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands for rebuilding.
And, of course, Donald Trump recently said he met the president of the Virgin Islands, when it turns out that Donald Trump is the president of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Sad but true. Meanwhile, for nearly 30 years, Republicans in Congress have tried to open up the public's pristine Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil and gas drilling. And this time, they may succeed by tying it to a must-pass budget resolution, which, under Senate rules, only needs 51 votes to pass. Republicans want to open the refuge to drilling to raise revenue to offset their proposed $1.5 trillion tax cut. At a Tuesday rally on Capitol Hill to call voters' attention to the Republicans' scheme, Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts noted the absurdity of the move now that the U.S. is an oil exporter.
So we would be drilling in the Arctic refuge to export to other countries in the world. We would despoil our own sacred land in order to help oil companies sell oil to China.
And this time they may actually get away with it.
But some good news that got lost amid all of the recent disasters. Canadian pipeline company TransCanada has abandoned plans to build two controversial proposed tar sands pipelines, the Energy East and the Eastern Main Line, after Canada's energy regulator implemented tough new requirements for approval. A growing number of proposed pipeline projects are now being canceled due to low oil prices and strong public opposition.
TransCanada was having problems finding customers for their still proposed Keystone XL pipeline. Any idea if that's moving forward?
They say it is, but we'll see what happens in the long term. In a sharply worded rebuke to the Trump administration, a federal judge recently reinstated Obama-era rules requiring the oil and gas industry to stop methane leaks from drilling operations on public lands, effective immediately. It's estimated the public loses $330 million a year in royalties because of the leaks and intentional flaring on federal lands. That's enough to power about 5 million homes a year.
So it releases dangerous methane into the air and it loses money for the U.S. That's some smart so-called conservatism right there.
Finally, in the wake of recent announcements from Britain, China, and France to phase out conventional gasoline-powered cars by 2040, oil giant Royal Dutch Shell this week opened up the first wave of fast-charging electric vehicle charging stations at gas stations in the UK. Shell also announced it has purchased the electric vehicle charging network company New Motion and its 30,000 private charging stations at homes and offices across Europe.
Yeah, as just about every car maker in the world right now says, we are going electric.
The writing is on the wall.
For much more writing on the wall, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com for those stories and the ones we couldn't get to. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
'Cause the writing's on the wall.
Ooh, that may be one of the grimmest bumpers that Brad and Desi have ever brought us. Speaking of music, real quick, just a note coming in from Mike in Cascadia. Gord Downie, and I saw this story. Gord Downie, a Canadian rock legend, sings goodbye. Mike writes, I've had the privilege of living 15 miles from Canada and poaching Vancouver and Victoria FM stations over the last 20 years. Back in 1997, I quickly realized that the Tragically Hip and their lead man, Gordon Downie, are giants. If they were based south of the 49th parallel, they'd be on par with REM, Springsteen, and Dylan. I saw the Tragically Hip live several times in Seattle, where they'd play in small venues. Usually the next night, they'd head to Vancouver, British Columbia, where they'd play for 50,000 plus. In Canada, the Tragically Hip are the national rock band. Lead man Gordon Downie, 53 years young, passed away Tuesday. Requiescat in pace. Brain cancer. In honor of the Canadian members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, a salute might be in order. And I was thinking exactly that because I had the obit for Gord Downie at hand. And this is, this is a huge loss for Canada. And maybe we'll find some way to work in a bumper somewhere along the way. Thanks for the reminder, Mike. Thanks very much indeed. Great songs. In fact, I think I'll educate myself a little further on the Tragically Hip over the course of the weekend. Maybe even find some time for a bumper this evening. So it is Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday, and if you want to get into the conversation, I certainly welcome you. We welcome you. Just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. And technical difficulties notwithstanding, because they do exist. We'll try to get you in there. As it is, let's go over and see what's happening with the birthday moderator himself. Happy birthday, Sparky.
Don't sing happy birthday, please.
Okay, you want
happy birthday? No.
He wants the orchestral.
Shut up.
He wants the orchestral.
Shut up, Rick.
He wants the orchestral. He wants the orchestral version. He doesn't want it sung. He wants it done by a whole freaking symphony. Is that it?
There you go.
Hey, you only get to reach 66 birthday once.
Ooh, and in June you'll be six at 66. Ooh.
Oh my God. That'll be a scary day.
But
in June?
Yeah, happy. Well, because June is the
sixth
month.
6-6-6-6.
You'll be
sixth month. Well, what's that have to do with my 66th birthday?
Well, that makes it 666.
Six. Well, I'm on my 67th year now. I'm through with 66.
Yeah, but you've turned 66. You weren't dipped by the heel, so you know it probably yeah. But everybody else is out there going, oh, 666, yeah. No, I get it. No, don't worry about it. Don't sweat it.
Okay.
So any big plans? I mean, it's still your afternoon and everything. Going out and painting the cows red tonight or anything?
No, they moved the cows.
Damn it.
They're in the next pasture over, but there's a couple. We can see him from the north door. Grady's up on the layout table. He can watch him. But I'll give you a product review. Don't buy a canine commando golf ball launcher for tennis balls.
No.
The balls they send you so flimsy. He chewed it up in like two runs.
Not intended for retrievers.
No. But you want to hear what happened Monday night?
Yeah.
This is a story. So at nighttime, Grady's got a bed in the house, stays on when I'm watching TV or anything. But then he'll get up and let you know he wants to go out. So I've been taking him out on patrol, I call it, because I'm afraid he's going to run into a raccoon. Well, Monday night, get to the sliding glass door and look out, and the motion sensor light's on the end of the walkway, and here's this raccoon standing there like deer in the headlights looking at that glass door, and he's like, oh, shit, a big dog. And he's just frozen. I open the door. The dog leaps 10 feet out the sliding glass door and is on that coon in about 2 seconds. Runs over by the shop here, by the rock shop area. My dad had this pipe that came out of the rock shop for an exhaust fan that when he was carving stuff, if there was any dust or anything, it's like a dust collector, but it just shoots it outside. Well, the coon was underneath this big pipe, reared back, hissing, teeth showing. They were nose to nose. I had to grab the dog and then yell at the coon to go. He ran through the fence and went up the neighbor's persimmon tree. But I never seen that dog move so fast, faster than a tennis ball run.
Wowzer. Okay, so one question. Do y'all have porcupines?
No. Never seen any porcupines.
Be glad.
They're more at the higher elevations.
Yeah, be glad.
I mean, I've ran into them as a kid in camping expeditions and stuff over when we used to go to the Sierras. My aunt and uncle had some property over there that had pear trees in them, and the porcupine used to love to get in those pear trees.
Well, there's nothing more pitiful than a dog that's made the acquaintance of a porcupine.
No, a skunk raced right up there.
Nah, that just makes them stink. That doesn't make them hurt. A dog doesn't really care about the stink. It's the people around it.
Yeah, but getting the stink off of them.
Oh yeah, that's a party.
Jeez, I mean, years ago I had a German Shepherd, and we had one of when he was pups, he was about a young adult dog, and they went out, and they both got hooked up with a skunk. So we had an old Victorian above ground bathtub with the gnarly feet on it, you know. We got both them dogs sitting in that bathtub. I wish you had a picture of it, you know, washing them down with tomato juice.
Yeah, I heard somewhere along the way hydrogen peroxide helps.
Well, that's what I used back then. That's all I can remember now.
And there's really, I remember when a friend of mine's lab got into a skunk, and you know, really the tomato juice kind of took some of it off. But I mean, it was like a year, and you could still, yeah, you made friends with a skunk, didn't you, Max? Yeah, you did. And you know, he'd just give you that. that Labrador Retriever look. Oh, of course I did. Oh, you stupid.
Yeah, he's giving me that look back now. Throw the ball. He's right between my legs.
And you look at him, well, you ate the ball. Or did you get more tennis balls?
No, there's more balls around here. But I was gonna tell you, I started. Oops. Hang on. Go talk to Rick. I got a phone call.
All right. All right. Sounds good. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you, Bob?
Pretty good. You feeling billable?
Not exactly. I'm not billing, so.
Oh.
It's gratis for you, man.
Big doings this weekend?
Yeah, I've got stuff happening Friday night, Saturday night, and I'm going to probably go swimming and body surfing on Sunday.
Sounds fun.
So, yeah, I got lots of stuff going on. Meeting I got a first date on Friday night. I got a second date on Saturday night, and I have another second date on Sunday. So, should be fun. I got to see the, game two of the NLCS on Sunday at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, not looking real good for the Cubbies.
No, but they did come back somehow last night, so we'll see. Got a game five in Wrigley tonight in about a half an hour, a little less than a half an hour. So.
And I need the Stros to pick up their game.
I am glad the Yankees are actually winning just because I go for the underdogs, Bob.
The Yankees are never an underdog.
I think they are this year because they were a wild card, no?
Yeah, but they're the Yankees.
I know. That's true. The damn Yankees,
I just,
right?
I don't know. What the hell happened to Cleveland?
I do not know.
But
I do not know.
I didn't expect it, but, you know, that's why they play the games.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's bizarre, you know? It's bizarre. I don't know, don't know what happened to Cleveland. I mean, they looked like they were unbeatable for, what, 22 games in a row this summer, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it just goes to show you, you just can't really tell what's going to happen based on the regular season in baseball. It's a strange sport that way. I've heard a statistic that, the Dodgers, you may remember, they lost like 12 games in a row in September. And there was a statistic that was in the LA Times right after their losing streak ended that no team in baseball history had lost more than 8 consecutive games in a season and still become world champions. And I think that one of the teams that lost 8 straight was the 2008 Cardinals or something like that? That maybe it was a 10 Cardinals.
Yeah, but what bugs me is if it's the Dodgers and the Yankees, then that means the TV executives are all going to be all happy.
That'd be okay. That would just think about it. That would be like the 40th anniversary of the Dodgers Yankees series in which Reggie Jackson hit 3 home runs in one game. You know, so.
That'd be kind of cool. October.
Yeah, exactly. That made him Mr. October. So, and interestingly, the home run in game two of the Dodgers game that I just saw on Sunday, it was the 29th anniversary of Kirk Gibson's walk-off home run in the World Series against
the Oakland A's.
The A's. There you go. Yeah, the A's. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it was kind of interesting. I mean, I had great seats. I sat like the top deck behind home plate, so I got a good view of the entire field. I felt like I was in a press box. It was very, you know, good seats. You can see generally if the pitches are good or bad. You can't tell the height of the pitch, but you can tell the, you know, orientation either left or right of the plate or over the plate, you know?
Yeah.
And, I had a bad feeling when John Lackey was brought in to pitch the ninth inning. He's got a reputation for giving up a lot of home runs, you know. And that Justin Turner is just a monster. That guy is like, he's got the third best OPS of any playoff player with 90 at-bats or more. He's just behind Gehrig and Ruth, who are tied with 1.2. 214 OPS. So, you know, that was, it was exciting for sure. I mean, people just, it was a madhouse after he hit that home run, Turner. So it was fun though. I had, had a good time.
But you'd still like, but you'd still like to see the Cubbies do it, come back somehow.
I would, but I think this is probably the Dodgers' year. It's hard to say, you know. But yeah, I mean, it just doesn't seem like the way the Cubs have played. They yesterday was the first game they played pretty much air-free baseball, I think, for the entire playoffs, I would say. You know, and the only reason why they beat the Nationals is that was the gang that couldn't shoot straight. I mean, those guys were totally hapless. I don't know how they lost game five. You know, it was a weird game. So, you know, the Cubs have been walking a lot of players. They've been committing errors. You know, they've been just, they've been swinging at pitches they shouldn't swing at, you know. So it's, you know, we'll see what happens tonight. I have a feeling that Kershaw may give up some home runs. We'll have to see, you know.
Yeah. Got to tee it up and go. So all that having been said, did you catch any of George W.'s remarks today? Because I'm having a real problem with him, Rick.
Well, all I've heard, Bob, is I have been kind of out of the news today. I had a two-hour sentencing hearing today in a case, got the client 3 years of probation, which was good for him. And then right after I got back to the office, I had to meet with a representative, a witness in a state income tax case in which she was just a witness, and the special agent wanted to interview her, so she had come to us to get representation. So I must say that the only thing I heard about is that, you know, they're trying to normalize Bush by sounding like a senior statesman, you know, vis-a-vis Trump. I mean, you know, that's like, what's that like? That's like saying that Napoleon wasn't such a bad guy compared to Joseph Stalin or Hitler, let's say.
Well, it's the idea. I mean, I've got the transcript here.
Oh, you didn't take one for the team and listen to the speech?
I did. I got bits and pieces of it.
I couldn't get back past the first part of it when he started talking. It was just same old goofy Bill Bush at first.
Where was he speaking?
He spoke at the Spirit of Liberty gathering. Spirit of Liberty at home in the world.
Isn't it at the Bush Library or something?
No, it was in New York City.
Oh.
And Kinda Sleazy Rice was there. Goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken. Madeleine Albright was there. Nimrata Haley was there.
Yeah.
And he's being, what's sort of sending me up the wall is that he's being hailed as having delivered a rejection of Trumpism. And I asked the same thing of the speech given by John McCain. And maybe this is because I'm a political cynic. But how can you deliver a rejection of Trumpism if you won't even say his freaking name? Okay? In both cases, neither McCain nor Bush said the name Trump. And so everybody was left to sort of say, well, you know, it's obvious that this was directed toward Trump and his followers. Well, maybe it's that obvious, but it's still reduced to a matter of interpretation. You know, he's Donald Trump. He's not freaking Voldemort, okay? If you say his name three times, he's not going to appear in a puff of smoke in the room like goddamn Beetlejuice, okay? I mean, if you're going to boldly call it out, call it out. But when he went into this business about what Republicans really believe, I mean, it was like a finger down the throat.
Yeah.
It was revolting. You know, because Republicans believe in unity and transparency and diversity. Right. Horseshit! Maybe he was speaking to an audience of let's see, math, quick. 9-year-olds. But I was here during his presidency. So were you.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem, Bob, is that we've got a president who is just so unhinged that by comparison, Bush looks normal, and some people are even longing for the days of Bush. At least we didn't wake up every morning under the Bush regime thinking, oh my God, we're going to have global nuclear war.
In the Bush regime, we woke up every morning wondering which wrong nation he was going to attack this time.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Bush didn't use Twitter, though.
You know, there it is. In many ways, Sparky, you may have just driven, I mean, you may have just countersunk the damn nail. But the fact of the matter is, he started an illegal war against a country that hadn't done anything to us. And that illegal war resulted in the deaths of 1 million or more Iraqi civilians, destabilized the region, and created the nightmare that people are still living in today. I saw video footage of what's left of the Iraqi city of Raqqa, or the Syrian city, I'm sorry. Or is it Iraqi? I don't know.
Raqqa.
Syrian.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's a Syrian city.
It's like looking at a. I mean, there's nothing left. It looks like cities after the bombing campaigns of the Second World War. Okay, there are nothing but skeletons of buildings and piles of heaps of rubble.
That's the way a lot of cities in Syria look now.
I realize that. And a lot of cities in Syria look that way as a direct and proximate result of what George W. Goddamn Bush did in destabilizing the region. And I'm sorry, I don't know. No, he doesn't get to be some sort of centrist now. I mean, when he said, and I'm, I got the, you know, I got the transcript in front of me. Our identity as a nation, unlike many other nations, is not determined by geography or ethnicity, by soil or blood. Being an American involves the embrace of high ideals and civic responsibility. We become the heirs of Thomas Jefferson by accepting the ideal of human dignity found in the Declaration of Independence. Well, many people became the heirs of Thomas Jefferson by having Thomas Jefferson rape a slave, but never mind. We become the heirs of James Madison by understanding the genius and values of the U.S. Constitution. We become the heirs of Martin Luther King Jr., and this is where, I mean, I had to reach for the bucket. We become the heirs of Martin Luther King Jr. by, wait a minute, it's the only phrase that Martin Luther King Jr. ever uttered that white people know. We become the heirs of Martin Luther King Jr. by recognizing one another, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And I'm supposed to buy into this? I guess I'm just a mean ass left wing troublemaker, but no, I'm not. Just because Donald Trump is the president does not mean I'm going to believe a bushel basket full of lies when stumbling, bumbling, dim leader begins to try to rehabilitate himself. Oh, here's a dandy. We need a renewed emphasis on civic learning in schools, and our young people need positive role models. Bullying and prejudice in our public. These are all true statements, okay? Those are true statements. He's just not the guy to deliver them because he never stood behind them in his entire misbegotten life. It's really frustrating. Oh, by the way, it's about 10 minutes before the hour, and I need to note that Brother Deacon Asa has a challenge on the table. We're trying to raise $300 this evening. And Brother Deacon Asa said that he would very much like to see, he ponied up $30 and said, I'd like to see 9 more people do the same thing so that we can end the week to the good at the horn. Can I get another 9 brothers and sisters to toss in 30 quid each in order to wipe out the fundraising? I'd be grateful to the Horn Denistas if we could, says Brother Deacon Asa. And big thanks going out to Sharon for jumping in as well. So we are $250 away from finishing the week to the good, and I'm planning on not being here tomorrow, so it would be really helpful if we could. Thanks, Sharon, and thank you to Asa for calling on the community to knock it all out. Note coming in from James, Bush v. Trump, war for oil versus war for personal gratification. Pretty much nails it down. When I heard Bush say, people of every race, religion, and ethnicity can be fully and equally American, it means that bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed. And the crowd went, and it means that the very identity of our nation depends on the passing of civic ideals to the next generation. Again, true statements. Wrong guy to utter them. But maybe I'm completely wrong in this, and this is just an only Nixon can go to China kind of thing. Because what this felt like was, a desperate attempt by the Republican old guard to try to convince the Trumpanzees to come back home. Well, they ain't coming back home, are they? Bueller?
No.
I don't think so. And so the idea that he's mad because Trump has divided us. Well, maybe it's just me. I'm pretty sure it's not, because I remember 8 years of people in his party squealing about the Kenyan Muslim usurper who joined in on the birth certificate crusade. And yeah, George was pretty quiet for those 8 years. But you know what? Five Deaf Dick wasn't. And that decent person's heart inside his chest. He was on every Sunday news show they could get booked on, talking about how Obama's a pacifist wussy Kenyan who, well, he's trying to give away America he's on his apology tour, and he bows to people. You know, when Cheney was vice president under a guy who kissed the Saudi king on the fucking mouth.
Let's also not forget Bob, who was George W. Bush's political advisor during his reign of error, Carl Frickin' Rove.
Oh, Turd Blossom
himself, and all the dirty crap he pulled, you know, and basically stealing Ohio for Bush with the help of Ken Blackwell, the Ohio Secretary of State in 2004, you know. So, you know, and then the whole firing of all the U.S. attorneys by Bush. He's definitely the wrong messenger to bring this message, you know. I could see Obama doing it, but he can't because he's black, right? You know, President Blackenstein can't say things like that about T. Rump.
No, the Republicans have to do it, but the thing is, they're trying. They're closing the barn door when there's nothing left of the barn but the door, and the rest of it's in ashes, and the horses are long damn gone.
No doubt about that. Yeah, yeah.
And I did notice, but okay. I mean, people are speaking out. But you have to pick the fight directly with Trump. You really do. You have to say his name. Because if you don't, he gets to hide. And he gets to pretend that he wasn't called out. Because the entirety of Trump's existence is nothing but a pathetic fantasy life. So Bob Corker, I mean, it's the same problem. You know, there's Bob Corker, and he's being made over to a fare-thee-well by the for-profit media. But Bob Corker voted for every nominee that Trump sent to Capitol Hill. So, I mean, isn't there a little bit of a disconnect?
Yeah, and the same thing with John McCain speaking out. It's like the guy has nothing to lose now, and nor does Corker, because they don't have to stand for election anymore. So it's real easy to be brave in that situation, you know? I'd like to see some Republicans that are actually facing, you know, re-election next year come out and speak against Trump. It ain't going to happen. Because they're cowards and chicken shits, you know.
Well, I think you just kind of
yeah, but they're all going to be primaried, except for Cruz.
No, I don't think they're all going to be primaried. A lot of them are going to be, but you know.
Well, Bannon wants to go after him.
He wants to. Whether he has the organization and whether he's sufficiently strong is another question.
Well,
you know?
we're gonna learn a lot about Bannon on December the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I keep coming back to it, and it's probably because I feel like I've got at least a little bit of a dog in the hunt. But that race in Alabama is getting more and more important by the day. You know, Sparky, you sent me that link yesterday. Doug Jones and Roy Tolamore are neck and neck. It's a dead heat now. 42% to 42%, 11 unsure. There's, let's see, 84, 94, 90, and then 5% are just, wandering around with their thumbs up their ass, I guess, because it's Alabama. And there was a story out today that Barack Obama has returned for the first time to the campaign trail. That he's campaigning for Democrats in Virginia, and he's campaigning for gubernatorial candidates in Virginia and New Jersey.
That's about a week old, isn't it?
No.
Well, I've known it for about a week.
There was noise being made today, but the fact of the matter is. That's great, welcome back to the fight. And I guess it's just my judgment on it. I hope he can find Alabama somewhere along the way, because there has just been a huge, and it proves my thesis a little bit, I think. There was a huge, huge win in the Birmingham mayoral race. And in that race, you had a really strong get out the vote effort. You had a really organized person to person campaign, and you had a candidate, get this, who was supported in this campaign by Our Revolution and the Bernie folks, but you also had a guy who had been a strong supporter of Hillary Clinton during the presidential primaries. How about that? And he won going away. He beat the incumbent badly. That kind of says that my little theory that if the hardcore burners and the hardcore hilarians can quit picking at each other's scabs and focus on the common enemy right at the gates, then big things can happen. Something similar happened in the mayoral election in Jackson, Mississippi. It may happen in Atlanta, Georgia. And the biggest of all the prizes would be to have a sufficient get out the vote effort and a sufficient degree of unity in Alabama to take a Senate seat away from the Republicans in the backest of their own backyard. And Barack
Obama, that would be sweet.
Barack Obama could go a long way in doing that.
Yeah, he could. He could. That would be really sweet, you know, if that could happen, you know.
I mean, you've got, I saw today where Tim Kaine, yeah, Tim Kaine is tweeting in support of Doug Jones. Joe Biden has campaigned in his support. It really is time. It really is time for Barack Obama to jump into that thing. And hopefully Bernie's people and Hillary's people will both get as excited about it as they badly need to be. Because then, I mean, what happens after that becomes amazing. Then, come next year, you can focus on, say, a Dean Heller who voted to take health care away from the constituent, his own constituents in his own state, in Nevada. You can focus on him. And you can focus on maybe getting a viable Democrat in Tennessee. And maybe Beto O'Rourke has a puncher's chance in Texas. And the next thing you know, if you can just hang on to the Senate seats you've got, well, damned if you don't have a majority in the Senate.
There was a good interview on the Young Turks with Beto O'Rourke with Cenk Uygur.
Oh, yeah?
I watched it last night. It's about 30 minutes long. They just talked about how he's approaching the campaign and everything, not using PACs and that kind of thing.
Right.
And how he's been traveling around Texas to places Ted Cruz never ever been to.
That'll make a big difference, because if he can pull a few burbs away from Cruz, he can win. Because he'll probably win places like Austin and in Houston if their voting system isn't a complete disaster after the hurricane. He can win there, and he can win in Dallas, he can win in Fort Worth. He's got to go out and win in the hinterlands where the mouth walkers and the knuckle breathers live.
And that's what he's doing.
So, you know,
he says he's had great turnouts in all those little towns.
Speaking of Ted Cruz, he got his ass whipped by Bernie in the debate last night. I saw a little clip of that. Bernie basically taking Teddy to the woodshed, you know.
But
Did you all see that?
But yeah, I saw clips. I didn't see the yeah. I didn't sit down and watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
I have to ask. I'm not challenging you, Rick. But how much of your impression? How much of your impression? How much of your opinion is confirmation bias?
Well, okay, probably 90%. I'll be honest. But I mean, basically, he said that, hey, you just met with, Bernie talked about the problem of, you know, Citizens United and money in politics and how, you know, the Koch brothers were going to be, you know, they the two of them, you know, together had wealth of like, you know, $95 billion. And they were going to be, you know, spending $300 million in the next election cycle. And Ted had just met with them 2 days earlier. And Ted actually admitted to it during the debate. It's like,
well, they're Americans and they have American constitutional rights too. Just because they're gazillionaires doesn't mean they're not Americans. And I love their money.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Their money smells just as good as anybody else's, right?
probably better, because there's so much more of it.
There you go. Yeah.
The clip I watched is when the Danish guy was asking him questions.
A Danish guy?
Yeah, and he turned it around and asked him, you know, about all the services in Denmark, about what do you pay when you go to the hospital? Nothing. What do you pay when you go to the doctor? $10.
Yeah. Well, you see, then, you get something from your tax dollars.
What about your kids going to school and they get a stipend?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the rest of the college is free. They get paid to go to college.
Yeah, well, you know, the irony is that, you know, even during the Tricky Dicky administration back in the 60s, there was talk about, you know, like a guaranteed income for everybody. You know, I mean, you would never hear that today.
Yeah, the little chuckle says everything.
Yeah.
But college during Tricky Dicky was a heck of a lot cheaper than it is today.
That is true. That is true. But, I mean, that was actually an agenda item on the national agenda. Oh, should there be a guaranteed income? It's like, there's no way you're going to hear anything. Even the Democrats aren't going to mention that in today's, you know, political scene, you know?
Right. And you know, we keep talking about raising the minimum wage to $15, that's still not going to get people up to a living wage, because that's only part of the problem. You know what's going to happen I'm not disagreeing with a $15 an hour minimum wage. I am not. I agree. Hell, I want a $20 an hour minimum wage. But it doesn't matter if you make the minimum wage $30 if people can't get enough hours for that to become a means by which they can support a family.
I don't
know how it is in California. I'm sure your state minimum wage is higher than mine is here. But
oh yeah.
But what we have here is minimum wage jobs where if you get one, the employer makes goddamn super duper double plus awful sure that you don't cross 30 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh yeah.
I think the
minimum wage in California is $10.50 an hour now.
Yeah, and it ain't that here. It's $8.75.
Hmm.
But there are places that'll hire you in at $10. But even at $10, if you can't get a full work week, I mean, at $10 an hour, even 40 hours a week is only $400 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before taxes.
Right.
And you're going to lose. Okay? I mean, you can't even subsist with something like that. You can't, if you're a young person, you can't move away from home on something like that. I mean, that's the kind of hours maybe you got if you were working a job. When, you know, back in a former generation, if you were working a job and going to college. Well, college is damn near impossible now. You know, so there needs to be some sort of legal structure that would accompany any raise in the minimum wage to make sure that people can get enough hours to support a family. Because the wage is low. There's no getting around that. But the other part of it is the inability to get enough hours to have the wages amount to anything at all. And, of course, part of that is that they want to make sure that none of their employees fall under the category of full-time employee, because you don't even have to have 40 hours to reach that. It's like 34, 36, something like that. And once you get there, then they have to offer you health care. See, mm-hmm. all of this is a vicious, mean-spirited, cynical response to the idea that the government could compel employers to offer health insurance to their workers. Plain and simple. So it becomes a multifaceted problem that has structural elements that have to be addressed before the issue of the minimum wage itself can really mean much of anything. And I don't know about people in other places, but where they run on the so-called tourism economy. But for instance, you know, the reason I'm knocking off tomorrow night is to be with my family for Bridge Day weekend event, festivities.
Mm-hmm.
And I may or I may not, you know, depending on how things shake out. And, you know, I don't know, the babies may be all tired and just want to hang out in the motel room or whatever tomorrow evening, and then we'll get up and get at it on Saturday, because Saturday's going to be a big, long day of walking, because you do a lot of walking on Bridge Day. The bridge itself is a mile long, and then there's a mile of event stuff going on the one side and a mile of events going on the other side. But that having been said, the tourism economy ends tomorrow around here. It's over. So everybody gets their hours cut. The people, you know, it's grasshopper and ant stuff. The people had more work than they could do. Okay, they could get all the hours they wanted in some of the businesses around here. And after this weekend, they'll not have any job at all until things begin to spin back up about mid-March. And then it'll start getting better in April. And then once school lets out, you know, June, July, and August are just, you can't get in a restaurant around here without a wait, you know, unless it's a chain or something. And then the rafting companies are busy, and the rock climbing companies are busy, and the bikes and all, right. But that's not an economy. So for the next, you know, let's see, November, December, January, February, March, for the next 5.5 months, you're going to have a lot of people who have a lot of time on their hands and hard times, no money, struggling to make ends meet. And once again, you know, to the extent that that's referred to as the tourism economy, that's not an economy. And I imagine other at least outdoor-based tourism economies are similar. And we don't have the things that would naturally maybe expand that season. The biggest one being, you know, recreational cannabis. If recreational cannabis was legal in this state, we would have a 12-month tourism economy. And you would,
January 1st here.
Really? Y'all go recreational on January 1?
Yep.
Well, you know, good for you. I mean, and you kind of had to, because what, Oregon and Washington already have it.
And Nevada.
But the thing is, there's nobody that has it within any meaningful if West Virginia had it, we would become a weed tourism mecca.
Yeah, you'd be the first on the East Coast, right?
Yeah. And there would be...
Wait a minute, Massachusetts has it.
Yeah, but they don't count. They don't count.
What do you mean they don't count?
Well, I mean they don't count. If you know, it's like the way people go to South Carolina to go to the beach from around here. Nobody's gonna leave Georgia and go to Massachusetts to get high. On the other hand, it's an 8-hour drive from Atlanta to here. So I mean, it would be tremendous. It would be great for the building trades, because there would be a building boom, because we wouldn't have the hotels to keep up with demand. You'd probably have year-round high employment in the restaurant industry.
Because, high employment, Bob?
Yes, high employment. Because
I thought you said high employment.
I did say high employment.
Oh, okay.
Because people who are getting high and smoking dope are fairly well known for suddenly saying, "Dude, let's get something to eat, man," and boom, they're over having a pizza or a craft beer and a kick-ass sandwich or something along, you know, even a nice sit-down dinner. And we've got places for all of that. And of course, hotels require people to clean the hotels and run the bars and. that kind of thing, and, you know, build the hotels. It is so obvious that the benefits to be had from recreational cannabis legalization in a place like West Virginia are so obvious that one realizes that it's never going to happen. Now, if you could find some way to make it necessary to mine coal in order to grow weed, then we'd have it. Or if you had to, let's say you had to frack for hash oil, we'd have it. We'd have it. Get it? See what I did there? Fuck it. I'm giving myself a cowbell.
That was good, Bob.
It's not hash oil anymore. It's CBDs.
I realize that, but I'm a geezer.
Well, I've vaped some White Widow earlier today.
I've heard of that stuff. Is it any good?
Oh yeah, it makes your whole body feel good.
I mean, is it like an up and perky high, or is it a couch magnet high?
No, it's an up and it's a perky high. You know, I'm basically doing make my joints feel better.
Boy, I tell you what, it's just one after another. Wait a minute. Cowbell for Sparky, for it makes my joints feel better.
Well, I got a bad knee.
Well, I know that, but you said joints in a conversation about cannabis.
Yeah, but isn't that just my wrong language?
Who rolls joints anymore? That's the lost science.
Not around here.
Sparky. Oh, yeah, I see them all the time at concerts.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, what about vape pipes?
Nah, people don't share vape pipes. They do share joints.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, the challenge remains on the table, and we are $50 out of... $50 out of... two out of 300 to raise... I just tried to bring somebody into the group. Did I? Yeah, I think I just brought somebody into the group.
Aloha.
Aloha. Who have I got?
It's Kenny.
Hey, Kenny, how are you, man?
Oh, pretty good.
All
this talking about weed, I couldn't help but call.
Well, I understand, and you know what? We welcome your expertise.
Yeah, I was actually just smoking some Widow myself.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we've got a local Widow. I changed the name on it, and that's the one I nicknamed the Garlic Ass because it just stinks so bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, is it garlicky?
No, it just smells really like rotten gym socks.
Somehow that seems like it would probably detract a little bit from the buzz, but does it?
It tastes fine when you smoke it.
Oh, it's kind of like that noxious Asian fruit durian. Smells like death, but it tastes real good.
Oh, that stuff is pungent.
Oh, okay.
But that's a very good reference. That it's illegal to eat that stuff in public in I think in the Philippines or whatever. It's so stinky.
I figured that would be Singapore. They're so persnickety about that thing.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I just opened the jar, smell the bud, and it's not very good.
Well, honest to God, all kidding aside, from a medicinal standpoint, I would do just about anything right now. You know, short of opioids and stuff, but for some reason I think I coughed hard or something, but I've pinched a nerve or something in just the upper part of my back, and it just this terrible persistent pain that runs down into my right elbow, and ibuprofen won't even touch it.
It won't. Dude, I got real bad neck pain right now, too, for some reason. I don't know why. It's like a muscle spasm type pain. It's just it's awful. And no medication helps it. Nothing.
All these the nerve pains. They are. Stuff like the cannabis is much better for it than the oxy or even ibuprofen or anything. And I'm having the same thing. I think I told you before. I got hit in the head with coconuts several years back, and I've been fighting it with my back and neck and hip.
Yeah, that sounds like some sort of a pratfall from a bad tropical comedy, but it's not. Those things hurt.
No, it's a Hawaiian cliche, but it is very true.
So, I mean, you've got a fair degree of expertise. What do you look for in terms of relief for something like that, the nerve pain? I mean, what kind of a strain? What kind of a hybrid or something?
More on the indica side. Widow is a very good one for pain. It's the best one I have for pain. It doesn't get you quite as high. You don't even have quite as the up effect as you just do a relief. So it's great at night. Oh, it is so good at night because it doesn't make your mind all scattered and thinking. It just releases all the pressure on the muscles and your back, and then once you relax, you pass right out. So it's real good at, relaxation.
I hate to say it, but I think I'd crawl across ground glass for something like that about now. Because this has been no relief for like 9 days now. And, you know, as an uninsured guy, it's not like I can go to the doctor. And even if I went to the doctor as an uninsured guy, it's not like they'd help.
No.
Is it gut problems, Bob, or what?
No. This is like, I had like some sort of a coughing spasm. I had an upper respiratory with a lot of coughing and a lot of sneezing. Agnes had it. Ferg had it. Yeah. And I had a bout of it, and I think I just coughed so hard I pinched or threw something out of place or something. And
You know, you can actually break a rib by coughing hard enough.
Yeah, this is in my upper back. This is like the last cervical vertebra, or the top couple of thoracic vertebrae, and it just goes down my right arm. And I can imagine maybe this is what tennis elbow feels like, because it hurts like shit.
Ouch.
But around here, mainly what we hear about is, dude, I've got some loud, and dude, I've got some MIDI. Every now and then you'll hear a word like, every now and then you'll hear somebody say, I've got some sour diesel, man. And the word kush will be uttered once in a while. But mostly it's just a price point designation between the stuff that's $100 a half and the stuff that's $200 a half.
Well, it's $100. It's just barely over $100 an ounce here. It's dropped so hard.
Jesus, I'm coming to Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, it's not good for people who try to resell, though.
No. That's hard on the economy.
We had an article in the paper where... they were, even in the paper, they were talking about how California weed was invading us and undercutting our market.
Oh, no, not the weed wars.
So is California californicating Hawaii now? I know they were after Oregon a while back,
It just depends on what area of Hawaii you go to.
Right.
The Kona side, or the west coast of the Big Island of Hawaii, is where most of the Californians like to move. It's a hotter, drier climate.
And meanwhile, we passed medical marijuana here in West Virginia, but they did so in such a way that there's no way you can get it.
To make it impossible.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But
we still don't have legal marijuana here.
No, y'all haven't gotten to it in Hawaii either, have you?
No, the whole West Coast, except for us. I guess we're not good enough. Don't understand why.
Well, probably because the black market economies. I don't know if it would be anything like what we experienced back when my county in Alabama was dry. You know, that meant you couldn't buy beer, alcohol, wine, liquor, nothing in the county, or in any of the surrounding counties. But every time there would be a referendum, a local referendum come up to legalize booze, the bootleggers would donate massive amounts of money to the churches, who would then lead the like Lauderdale Citizens for Decency and Morality to defeat the referendum. The county didn't even go wet until after I went away to college. So I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit of it too. I mean, no kidding. Maybe the folks who run the so-called black market economy are happy with the way things are.
I think it's more from the Japanese influence here.
How so?
To them, it's very taboo.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why, but it's still, and it's just that the older Japanese are very entrenched in the politics here, so.
I never would have thought of that one.
Because all our new senators and everything are for it. So it's got to be the older legislators and stuff that are not, you know.
Well, you've got a senator who seems to be a pretty decent human being, Senator Hirono.
Her too. All of them. They're all fighting for us.
Really? I mean, she's battling cancer, so I would think she would be at least sympathetic to the issue.
No, I'm just saying in general, all our senators and congressmen from over here are definitely they're making as much noise as they can for as far away from Washington as they are. And I mean, not just about the marijuana, but about Trump. God, you know, Schatz is always, you know, calling out Trump.
But of course, anything in the way of cannabis legislation is going to have to come out of your state legislature.
Right. And that's why that's slow.
When do they meet again, Ken?
I'm not for sure, but I know it's not even on the board right now.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, are there, when you mention indica strains, are there any indica strains you can mention just off the top of your head that maybe I could keep my ears peeled for?
Well, see, most indica strains are, nobody grows pure indica that much anymore, except for specialty growers, you know. Because indica is like the stuff that came from Afghanistan. So it's going to be short, squat, real dense, and it's really hard to work with. So everything you've got nowadays is more hybrids of indica, sativas. And for us to grow outdoor here, you really have to have a hybrid. A pure sativa doesn't do well, and a pure indica doesn't do well. So right in between, like the Sour Diesel, which is like 20 to 25% sativa, and then the rest indica, that's a really good outdoor strain here. But it's not as good on pain. It's more for just getting high. I call that one the loser keys weed. Do not smoke
before
you get ready
to leave the house.
Did you ever hear of green crack? Yes, I actually have green crack.
I smoked that last Friday, okay? And I got really, really high. And I was talking to somebody, and right in the middle of the sentence, I just forgot what I was saying. Like, right in the middle. The person that was talking to me wasn't high and was like, yeah, they must have thought I was a nutcase or something, because it was weird. And actually, you know what it did to me when that happened? When that particular thing happened, I got, like, scared, you know? Like, it gave me anxiety because I was like, what? I thought I was having, like, a stroke or something. Like, it was just the weirdest thing, man. That stuff, I don't know. I don't like to smoke every day because I don't get high if I do. So I try to do it, like, on the weekends or something. And maybe one hit during the week, you know, in the middle of the week just to, you know, help me get through the week. But, you know, and I smoke it out of a bong and put some keef on top of that. And, I mean, it just boils my brain. I mean, it gets me so blazed. I just get so high anymore, and I get very, very paranoid. You ever get like that?
That's definitely from the sativa side, you know, because the sativa side is just pure mind. It only affects your mind.
I'm learning. You know, many years ago, I was a pretty respectable little pothead. I'm learning a ton just sitting here listening now.
Your kids ever partake? If you don't, I mean, if you don't want to, you know, I don't want to get into personal stuff, but I'm just, Ferg seems like a pretty cool guy.
I think it is unreasonable to think that anybody around here under the age of 30 has not been exposed to it.
Same here.
That's America generally. And I remember, you know, back in my day, you know, we all said, look, you know, by the time we get to where we're running the show, you know, by the time we're, you know, up in our 50s, and, you know, we'll take care of this, by God. This is silly that you can get thrown in prison for this. This is just a harmless little goddamn weed. Well, we're here. And I guess there's some progress being made, but not near enough. I mean, our governor here in West Virginia, Jim Justice, is literally the biggest corn farmer in the entire eastern United States, in addition to being a coal baron. When you consider the cultivational needs of hybrid strains of corn versus the cultivational needs of cannabis, and check me if I'm wrong here, Ken, I'd love to have your input. Wouldn't you think a guy that already had that kind of farm holdings would think, you know, I can make a fortune on pot?
Oh, easily, for sure.
And yet he's sitting there in the governor's mansion saying, I don't want to make our opioid crisis any worse. We don't need a bigger drug problem by adding another drug problem by legalizing the marijuanas.
No, that's a complete lie, because we're already proving it. Colorado and other states that have legalized have already started to drop their opioid crisis. Yeah, so they can keep their damn lies. I'm tired of their lies.
Well, it's a vicious kind of a lie too, because of course, you know, we've got an attorney general who's out there waging his own war on drugs, and the sucker was a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry up in New Jersey before he came down here. And his wife was directly related to the companies that dumped the millions and millions of pills into this state. And, you know, I don't like pain pills. I've had occasions where, you know, I've been away from the microphone for a couple of weeks because when I got hit with my first bout of gut troubles, it was stay in bed, eat the pills, don't eat anything else, drink water, lose, you know, and I was just
yuck.
Yuck. It was awful. It was terrible. If there was some other kind of relief to be had, I think I would take it.
Yes. Well, for example, just a quick example, back in my teens, I had a knee injury and they tried to give me Vicodin. I took one pill, and I didn't like the way it felt, and I didn't never take another one. And I don't take pills. I can't stand pills. I take them like ibuprofen every once in a while because of this nerve problem I keep having in my neck. But I get much better relief with cannabis, and then I don't have any type of after effects. It doesn't bother my stomach. And I actually use the cannabis to help regulate my stomach problems. So I've been using it for so many years, I know exactly what I'm doing. I mean, it helps my body, and it keeps me, I get a lot less sickness than a lot of my friends. I mean, just like colds and stuff. And I'm like, what is that from? How am I avoiding a cold just by smoking weed or something? I don't know what coincidence, but over the years, I just really hadn't had hardly any colds or anything, and, you know, around other people that are having them. So it definitely affects your respiratory system, but for the better.
Well, I'm at a place where it's a little tough for me to smoke, because I just, you know, I cough my fool head off. But I'd certainly rather do that than, because I, you know, after several days of ibuprofen, you know, 800 milligrams every 6 hours, I'm going nowhere. And you know, no pills.
Wait, you need it internally versus smoking anyway, if you're having that much trouble. That's why I eat a lot of it, and I like to eat it virgin, like picked straight off the plant. That way it's not been, it has not dried out and has not changed to a psychoactive component.
Really? So it has beneficial effects that way?
Yes. Oh, yes. And it's much, I don't know, it's different. It's I don't get high at all from it, but I'm saturated, so I can't really judge that. Other people eat two buds of mine, and they're like, whoa! And I'm just like, I'm eating bud after bud after bud, you know, because I eat it for, like, breakfast. You know, it just helps my stomach. So, you know, it's good for
fish and everything. I always heard that there had to be some sort of combustion-type process in order to activate the psychoactives.
Well, that's the drying process. Just the drying process itself makes it psychoactive. And then, of course, if you, like, cook it, like, say, to make brownies or anything, that's why it gets even stronger.
Well, I'm a little leery of the edibles just because of the stories I've heard about people. And, you know, I know this mindset from younger me where you eat something and, you know, an hour and a half later it's like, well, nothing's happening. I guess I'll eat another one. In that case, many years ago, it was acid. But you know, you see the stories now where people, hour and a half later, and then the next thing you know, they're able to see Jesus.
Scott, yeah, well, that happened to Scott. Just the other night, he was talking about that. You know, we have a really bad drug problem where I'm living. You know, I live in an area in Pennsylvania where so the suburbs meet the rural area. And as far as I know, what sparked the drug problem where I'm at, particularly specifically, was back like 15 years ago, they banned skateboarding where I live. Our Teabagger Borough Council actually banned skateboarding in the town, and it was a really big deal because there was a lot of skateboarding was the big thing where I'm from. Around here, that's kept a lot of people out of a lot of trouble, and I mean, no sooner than a year after they banned skateboarding here, everybody was into drugs. And in fact, I had one of my best friends was a really, really talented skateboarder, was probably going to go pro had they not banned skateboarding. So there's no skate park around, and within about 6 months after them banning it, he was eating fentanyl patches, eating them.
Oh no, I know of people ODing from that shit.
Yeah, and that's for as far as I could tell, it was a direct result of our Teabagger Borough Council, who did that at the behest of the local police because they were tired of skateboarders on the roads. They hated skateboarders. They're bigoted against us, and they did that.
Is that because of the? The wild-eyed gang of skateboarding muggers who were taking purses from little old ladies in blue woolen coats? I mean, what?
Really? Did that happen?
No, I mean, not the woolen coat. No, but see,
no,
it doesn't. Things don't have to happen, John.
It sounds like the excuse they've used.
Yeah, things don't have to happen. They just have to wander into the consciousness of terrified conservative people.
That's right. That's
hey,
exactly
look at
right.
them over. Look at them over there, marveling with their skatey boards and their long hair. And that one's wearing a bandana on his head. Little heathens. They probably worship Satan.
Yep.
Because that's conservatism.
And well, actually, one of the police officers where I live at the time. Got in pretty big trouble because he took somebody's brand new skateboard. I mean, these complete skateboards, even back then, were like $100. And this cop got pissed off and snapped the skateboard. And he got in trouble for that. But they would confiscate the skateboards. And then they found out later on that was illegal. They were not allowed to do that. So they've actually confiscated these skateboards from kids and then auctioned them off.
Well, you know what they say when skateboards are outlawed, only outlaws will have skateboards.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Hey, it works for the gun industry. Let's see, a couple of things real quick. Thank you very kindly to Mike and Cascadia for jumping in. That means we've got roughly seven $30 contributions to go to meet Ace's, Brother Deacon Ace's kind request that we finish up the fundraising for the week and let me take a Friday night off. Thank you very kindly for making that request, Asa, and thank you, Mike and Cascadia, and thank you, Sharon, for jumping in as well. And we do, let's see, what is it? Send it $210 more dollars and we're done. And we got about 19 minutes to do it in. Clarity has jumped into the conversation. Hey, Clarity.
I was finishing my dinner and all you potheads were having a conference there, and I wanted to scream at you. But a guy I played jazz with when I lived in Oakland had real bad neuropathic pain in his feet, and he swore by, and I think it is pretty good if you can find it. It's called Granddaddy Purple, and it's a pretty predominantly indica strain.
Indica.
Yeah. And you can tell it's an indica when it doesn't burn up. When you put it in the bowl and you still got a lot of ash, that's an indication of an indica, where sativa will burn completely to white ash.
Thicker tissue. Yeah. Thicker tissue.
More fiber.
Exactly. Right. More fiber. Not as easy to smoke most of the time, but, you know, still very good.
This is a little clinic going on, and I really think it's kind of cool because you hear these names, and in a black market situation, unless you know who's growing, you really never know what's what, and frankly, it makes you never know who's there's ways to cheat the weight and things like that. So this is actually kind of helpful.
I was thinking about that the other day. How many times down through the years I got burned, got something that was ersatz. You know, when I was desperate and went out looking for stuff on the street, or times when I bought bags that literally the water was condensing on the inside of the bag. They'd been steamed, you know. And one time I bought a pound just before I went on the road, and the first couple joints we smoked out of it almost got a wreck because it had little bitty belts of rock that were just like this hot shrapnel dropping down into your lap.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, as you're smoking, you know, it's as if seeds weren't enough, you know.
Well, see, there's a certain generation out there, and you know, it's another one of those, I guess it's a sign of progress that you get, when people look at you funny when you use the phrase Mexican ditch weed.
Well, we still got it here. But that's because they still have a moratorium on the west end of Umatilla County. Pendleton got dispensaries just within the last 3 months. In fact, this was the first roundup where they had legal weed in town, and they said it was their best rodeo ever.
Well, I'll bet.
But you know, just 5 miles up the road, the Umatilla Indian Nation has, it's illegal there. They enforce federal law, and of course they make a lot of money because people go to the casinos because you can still smoke cigarettes in the casino.
And I'll bet they sell their own brands of cigarettes too, don't they?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised about that. I can't go in there. It's secondhand smoke just kills me. But what I was going to say was that the term is, between raw leaf and then where it's, you know, better is carboxylation. You know, you heat it up and it adds another carbon molecule and it makes it, you know, easier for your body to absorb and pass through to your brain.
Well, so you know, I mentioned the phrase hash oil a little bit ago. And I guess now it's referred to as wax and honey. Ken, you seem to have the greatest degree of expertise. That stuff is produced, isn't it, with, you know, like hydrocarbon gases and stuff. Is that safe?
Well, there's different ways. There's clean ways, and then there's the dirty way. There's, butane. Butane's the way a lot of people make it, which is the dirtier way. But then there's a cleaner way of just using CO2. CO2 extraction that most of my friends are using now, completely clean. And, you know, you've got a complete supreme clean product.
Very clean.
So, yeah, pure THC.
And you don't need very much of it.
I don't like it, though, because I like bud. I don't know. I don't like the...
Well, it's a pain in the ass to deal with.
It's different. It's like a...
It's hard to handle.
It's like a rocket.
Yeah. But I with, you know, me being at my age with my COPD, the bud, the tars just really get to me. Even with the vaporizer, I have a volcano. Since I've been doing the vapes, though, get a vape cartridge, my lungs have been a lot better. My horn planes, you know, I've got better wind now, even after just a month off of the buds.
Okay, so help me out here because, and by the way, wait a minute, I got a little cowbell to pass out. That's for Earther. And we're back with Pot Kincaid. I mean, Bob Stonecade. I mean, yes, right. But
educating Bob.
This is the education because, you know, all I remember is driving to work at the gospel radio station with Frampton Comes Alive folded open and sifting seeds out of a dime bag on my lap as I drove keeping the car on the road with my knees while I'm
all right. Jesus is just all right with me.
Yeah, and sifting the seeds with the cover of the cover of the papers package, and then you know rolling a doobie and trying to choke one down before I got in to start queuing up the chuck wagon gang.
The Visine and the perfume, and I'm ready to go to work.
God damn! Hey, no, never Visine. Clear eyes only. That shit works. Visine's just branch water. Optometrist told me so once upon a time. With that as my background, so now you can actually go to the dispensary and you buy a vape cartridge of what, oil or, I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oil extracted from different plants. And most of the time, you know, they're going to have it labeled what type of plant or, you know.
Yeah, and the percentage.
That's the whole thing about legalization. It makes it so much better.
Oh,
you
yeah.
get to know what the hell you're doing.
Well, that just sounds remarkably civilized.
Wow.
Even out here where there's no competition, and we know that they're, you know, the city's put another 5% on top of the state's 25%, it's still better than getting burned, you know, any day of the week getting a light bag that's half stems and, you know, crap.
Yeah, and then you mentioned wet. Then there's moldy.
Right.
Been there, too. But also...
I remember so many things. I think it was the summer of 1985, and in Morgantown, West Virginia, there was nothing. I mean, nothing. Nothing to be found.
It's summer dry.
And it was the summer term, and some enterprising young capitalist just had a shit ton of T-shirts printed up that had this wonderful caricature on the front of it that said, "I survived the Morgantown dry spell, July 1985." And on the back was another cartoon with a couple of stoners look at each other in a dialogue bubble that said, "Dude, I suggest we shake out the carpet."
Yeah, the equivalent of squeezing out your cotton when you're a heroin addict. Yeah.
I mean, it's seed crushing, resin scraping. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, bomb scraping.
The resin we used to call black magic. So we're doing the black magic again.
Yeah. Has me in its spell. That old black magic that I know so well.
Wait a minute. It's not often Clarity sings for us.
Round and round I go. I just stub my fucking toe. Ho, 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 ho. That black magic called weed.
You know, the things that energize people on this program. I just got a message from Libby. from an old stoner, Leafly is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like weed porn. Wow, that flower really is purple. Son of a bitch.
Oh, a friend of mine, there's a new strain in the valley called Multnomah something or other, and those buds look just like a Christmas tree with all the trichromes and the different colored, you know. Had a picture of a bud that he bought at the dispensary. And he says, this is my Christmas tree this year. I'm just going to have it blown up.
Yeah, the purple strains didn't used to be as good as they are now, definitely. But, you know, we're breeding all the better strains into the purple. That Granddaddy grape, I've never had a female of it, but I had a male, and I used a male to breed to Sour Diesel. So I made Sour Grape, and that's one of my favorite strains I have right now. It's just really, really nice. I don't know how to describe the flavor, just really smooth flavor.
Yum. Yeah.
Just really good.
There was a raspberry kush one time that I got, and I, you know, it just had such a nice fruity berry flavor to it. You know, it was almost like a Merlot or something, you know?
Oh.
Well, all kinds of comments coming in. Let's see. Here's our buddy, the Urban Prospector, saying, "Super lemon haze, Bob. It's very debilitating."
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then, courtesy of Scott, and I don't know what kind of seed Punky prefers, but Scott says, "I can't remember if it's indica or sativa or a hybrid, but years ago I got a strain called God's Gift. As the name suggests, it's amazing." So it. And you know, I think as we get more civilized, you know how there's that consortium that decides what's, you know, what the new emojis are going to be, and there's another consortium that maintains, you know, the .dot extensions for the internet. We're going to need a naming consortium for cannabis names, or else we're going to wind up, you know, like the wine scene. Oh yes, it's a lovely vintage, redolent of cherries, drying on a tree alongside old Rawlings baseball mitts and sweat socks. But we're kind of already there, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, there's Willy Weed being sold in some of the dispensaries here in Oregon.
Oh, you mean as in Nelson?
Yeah. Now, how he gets around the interstate stuff, you know, dealing with that. Maybe they're growing it here.
Yeah, they've branded his stuff.
Yeah.
I think Snoop's trying to brand something.
Now, that would be something, because he's definitely, you know, been around it for a while.
There's a lot of money in the seed sales.
Meanwhile, of course, there's some tight-ass criticism going on, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, who's taken it upon himself. "Thanks for making it sound so harmless, Kincaid. Now all the kids out there are going to get potted up on weed and randomly kill people in the street." That's a reference to Steve Ducey from 2015, in case you forgot it. Jesus.
Does anybody still have axes? I mean, I just don't hear much about axe murders anymore. That's what they told me, that, you know, your first joint, you're going to go pick up an axe and kill your mother.
Well, you know, now that the NRA's made it so that you can get a gun easier than you can get a goddamn fishing license, the market for axes has gone down significantly. The only trouble then is you have to remember what you did with the bullets. That's where that problem comes in.
Yeah.
Okay. Serious nerdism. My favorite papers. Years and years and years ago, back when joints were a thing, people would get really snotty about their papers. Sure. Like, for instance, you know, the one when JB came out with the 1.5s, or Job, even though it's just a diamond, it's not an O. Those things, that was like rolling with cardboard off a toilet paper tube, which of course
right up there with Tops, yeah.
And I, you know, somewhere along the way, I discovered, the SD Modiano, club cabaret width. And those things were wonderful because you could set fire. I mean, you could test it. You could set fire to one in an ashtray and drop it as it was on fire, and there would be no ash when it landed.
Yeah.
It was almost total combustion. And there was
gumless.
And there was no glue on it. Exactly. And it stayed but it was so thin that it stayed together as if it had glue on it, and it just rolled the perfect joint. And I just on a lark, I went out looking on the internet. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. And it may have been the best product ever, but you know, now they got stuff that's made out of, well, you know, hemp and things like that. But none of it touches the, because it was real easy to roll with, even though it was a real fine, delicate paper. And I think Rizla owned them. And for some reason or another, they just disappeared. Go figure.
Well, and then they had, I think they're still on the market, but they didn't catch on. They had a see-through paper that was actually made out of cellulose.
Yeah,
but
I was just going to mention that. I like those. They kind of just disappear.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's almost like it's plastic, but of course you know it's not plastic. It just melts away. Yeah.
And I remember the one. Let's see. There was a brand called Pouch that it was stuck together on both ends. I hated those. There was one that had a wire attached to it so that it formed its own little roach clip. We've opened the doors to memory lane. Ron and Raleigh says, back in the day, I got hold of some Kona Gold. I got a friend so high, he said never let him smoke anything like that again. Had to scrape him off the ceiling. A lot of ceiling time out there. I'm told, Scott tells me, none of my strains have seeds, but Punky does like the secondhand smoke. He sings up a storm. The birds, really, the birds. We're just, is there no end to the depravity?
Isn't that called animal abuse? I think somebody should call the Humane Society.
No, I don't think you'd ever get any testimony out of Punky. Punky seems like a pretty Punky seems like a pretty stone guy.
I think he's bound by the Bird Muerta, the code of Bird Muerta, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They could take a stool sample.
That's true.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good on anybody who wants to do that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
DEA, they'll
old
do
San
it.
Diego Tribune's burn, damn it. That's why. Jeez.
I think most animals are pretty happy with it. I just had a bat with caterpillars, picked off 50-something caterpillars in 3 days off just like 10 plants. So, you know, and they didn't go for any of the buds that weren't done. They only went for the buds that were done, the ones that was going to pick the very next day.
Yeah.
So they know what they're doing. They're going and they drill right through the center of the best part of the bud.
Yeah.
And when you find the caterpillar, he's all stoned. He's all just like slow.
Hey, Lewis Carroll knew what he was talking about with that hookah-smoking caterpillar.
That's right. Actually, it was the hookah-eating caterpillar, I suppose. Has this entire hour been devoted to pot?
granted, the program this evening was brought to you by galvanized garbanzos, but I have a feeling it was more like White Witch.
White Widow.
White Widow.
There you go.
I started it.
Sparky started it.
It was kind of a West Coast flavor to it, too, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess Hawaii qualifies as West Coast, but, you know.
Well, like, every strain can be, you know, varied. The White Widow itself varies from a really pungent all the way to, some people say, like, a wicker smell. And then sometimes some people say it even smells sweet. So, you know, it's all the same strain. It's just different people growing it.
I've noticed an aroma
of the same strain. You're lucky if you get two that are very similar.
I've noticed an aroma in some that's almost like grapefruit that's kind of appealing.
Oh, yeah, you'll get citrus highlights. You'll get fruity highlights. You'll get pine, you know, all those flavors mixed. Depending on, you know, where it was grown, you know, how hot it is at night and how cool it is, how hot it is during the day and night, you know, and the relative humidity, all those things.
I walked into a guy's house not too long back, and I said, Jesus Christ, it smells like Santa Claus killed a skunk with a Christmas tree in here. Because it was all it was all pine and skunk.
That's skunk, bud.
Calling the ball.
And the old skunk was more of a sativa.
Oh, really? Yeah, because, I mean, I guess I'm just kind of a wimp. I got to where, you know, I'd have a little blast every now and then, like, do, you know, just a couple of puffs. And, yeah, it's enough for me now. I think I'm going to go and bury my face in a bag of Cheetos, and, you know, maybe you'll hear from me later.
Well, what, I can't remember his name, but said earlier about him having that strain and then having a panic attack.
Yeah, that was John.
That's usually what happens, you know, after you haven't smoked for a couple of weeks and then you get a couple good hits of something good. Yeah, it can.
Strong.
Yeah, it can hit you pretty heavy, you know, and if you forget that, oh, it's just, you know, it's just a drug. It's not going to last that long. I'm not going to die. My heart's speeding up, but I'm not having a heart attack. But when you're in the heat of the moment, it's like, okay, I better go to the emergency room.
Well, I could go on with this all night, but unfortunately I can't. We're a minute past the hour, so I guess we'll call a close to this. Thanks to Mike and Sharon and Brother Deacon Asa. We will finish about $250 down from the $300 we needed to raise. Hopefully most of that will get knocked out by our good-hearted subscribers. But if you're listening to the podcast or something, yeah, it's still at $250, and you know, bills to pay. They really are bills, and they really do keep us on the air. So thanks everybody. Thanks Sparky for hosting a Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday. Hey Ken, it was great to hear from you, buddy. Don't hear from you a lot, but you sure pack a punch when we do. Clarity, it's good to see you jump in.
Everyone. It's very good hearing from everybody else, too.
It was very enjoyable, and you know, thanks for the education. And thank you, Clarity. You contributed educational materials as well. Thanks to Rick, and thanks to John for jumping in. And thanks, everybody, for participating in the program in whatever manner you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Thank you, one and all. And, well, I don't know. If the kids are just worn out after school and stuff and just want to, you know, then I will be back tomorrow night. But if we're out having some sort of family fun, I won't. That's all I can really tell you. But always, so, you know, I will say prophylactically, have a great weekend, everybody. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.